You're listening to an encore presentation of We the People. You can hear this show live every Friday night from 7 until 8 p.m. Your source for locally how you can get involved to make a difference. Tune in. Thanks for listening. Get out there and make a difference. Marcus, Texas, Hays County, and the rest of the world. This is your connection every Friday night from 7 until 8 o'clock. Coming at you from San Marcos, Texas, deep in the heart of Texas, deep in the heart of the country, deep in your hearts, too, we hope. This is Rob Rourke with you. I'm the host, and this is a political commentary show. The views expressed on the show are those of the hosts, the guests, and not necessarily those of SMTXCRA, the governing board, or KZSM. Yes, folks, we've got sitting across from me, Griffin Spell. We'll bring him up here in just a minute. He is a filed candidate for City of San Marcos, place 5 on the ballot. And we're going to be talking to him for most of the next hour. Also, we are going to be talking about Malachi Williams, a 22-year-old who was shot in the back fleeing from police, had two knives with him, was in the HEB parking lot. The officer has been cleared. We're going to talk about that by a Hays County grand jury. And they did have the video got released today. A whole bunch of things are happening. We've been covering that for you. And it is election time. You have until Monday night, folks. Yes, Monday night, 5 o'clock, you can file. If you don't like what's going on, you want to file, you want to get involved, but who knows who else is going to jump into the race. We're going to be talking about that. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be right back with you. Across from me here tonight, Mr. Griffin Spell. How's it going, Griffin?
Good to be back in the studio.
There you go. And we were kidding about that coming in. I was saying, yeah, same format I have had for this last, we're now on 8 seasons here of We the People here on KZSM. Now, previously we did about, 2.5 years?
2.5 or 3 years.
3 years that we did on the video site, yeah. SMTX TV.
And I helped produce that with you, and I actually think I guest hosted a couple episodes of that show.
Yeah, we did a couple of them, and had the flag and had the backdrop. You know, this is early podcasting. Yeah. We didn't know it was podcasting at the time.
Well, we were kind of on the cutting edge in a lot of ways in terms of, you know, high definition video and audio and producing it locally.
Yeah, well, and it just. It goes to show what's happening here. And what it was that it was a, what was the name of the software?
The Coolabytes.
Yes, Coolabytes. And they had a proprietary software that they had developed here at Texas State, and that they went off and they made their fortune off of this video software that basically what it did was it didn't try to do every pixel. It did 1 out of every 4 pixels or something along that line. And it helped to compress it.
1080p video at a time where that was really that kind of the limit of what you could do online.
And so many people couldn't get us here in the county. So I'm going to kind of take that from here you are, you know, we were doing that, 15 to 20 years ago, 15 yeah. years ago. Yeah. And you have been along with that technology, being here as a Texas State student and then
being part of the community and being part of the, you know, helping launch the station here.
Yeah. So, here we are, and we'll come back to this question in a minute, but the theme here is, yeah, what are the changes that we've seen in San Marcos, and where are we going? And that's the big thing that I want to talk about tonight. But first, I'm going to give this man a chance to tell you about himself here in the elevator speech, and let's talk about where you come from in Houston, okay?
Sure. So I was born in Galveston, moved here in 2007 to go to Texas State. I've been involved in the community since then. I was on the city's first neighborhood commission. I was then appointed to the Historic Preservation Commission, served there for 5 years. The last two of those were as chair. And then I was appointed right at the beginning of COVID, actually, to the Planning and Zoning Commission. And so I've been there since 2020, so 4.5 years now. Yeah. I am now the vice chair of that commission, and I'm running for place 5, which is a open seat. Mark Gleason is not going to seek re-election this year.
Here in San Marcos for city council. So,
and these, by the way, are citywide elections. Mm-hmm. They're places, but it's citywide, so everybody in San Marcos will have 3 options: a mayor, place 5, and place 6.
Right. But you're going to be down at the bottom of the ballot.
Oh, yes. At page 3 out of 3 or 4 out of 4.
On a presidential year. Mm-hmm. That is going to probably see, you know, record numbers of people and people pissed off. And, it's going to be an interesting
one. We're expecting turnout numbers to be at, if not exceeding, what they were 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And that was already a San Marcos record.
And that was with Prop A on the ballot.
2020
too.
Was a presidential election year in 2020 with Biden and Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And so that was the last big election presidential year. But city politics,
the 2022 though, with Prop A on there, was a watershed. We had about 800 more voters that voted that we normally wouldn't have had.
Yeah, and I have to nitpick here and point out that. And see, this is what you and I have done for years, the sort of election analysis stuff.
Yeah.
There's really 3 different cycles: odd year elections, congressional election years, presidential election years. This is the biggest of the 3. So we may have 30,000 voters for mayor.
Yeah.
And it trickles down the other races. So I'm expecting realistically I need to plan on getting 15,000 votes just to make sure.
So if this is a contested one, I saw driving in here, coming down Hopkins, I saw Maria Dunn had her signs out.
And Maria Dunn is running in place 6.
Yes.
I'm running in place 5.
I just wanted to
make that clear.
That was it. I wanted to make that clear that I knew that it was 2 different places.
And Maria is a colleague of mine on planning and zoning.
Right.
And so we've known each other for a while now. But she's running in her race, I'm running in mine, and of course Mayor Houston is running for re-election for mayor.
Right. So, that is who all is filed. Now you have, and we're not going to get into this, I don't want you to talk about this, but you do now have a someone that has filed against you. Let me rephrase that. It's not filed against. It has filed for a place on the ballot on place 5. And that is apt to change. People will withdraw and people will file and all sorts of things happen at this last little bit, but it is coming up. On Monday is the deadline.
Monday at 5 p.m.
At 5 p.m.
You know, and I've told people from the beginning, if I enter this race, I'm running on my own merits and my own qualifications, not who else is in the race or who's running, whether it's one person or whether it's 15. You know, we've had mayoral elections in the past, couple of years where we've had 5 candidates. We've had city council races where we've had 4 or 5. But my position is basically I'm running on my own merits and qualifications. I think those are very strong. And the feedback I've gotten has been very positive. So, I'm gonna run and campaign for as many votes as I can get. And we'll see what the voters decide in November.
So let's talk about that. Okay, so what are the things that you're running for? All right, you've got the This is going to be for 2 years, right?
Or 3 year terms.
3 year terms, excuse me.
Mayoral terms are 2 years.
That's
city council terms are 3 years.
3 years. Thank you. And so you're going to be next 3 years. If you were to win this in November, you would start sometime at the end of November, right before December.
And assuming we don't have a runoff.
Assuming you do. Exactly. Yeah. Thank you. Assuming we don't have a runoff. Okay. So you've got... okay, so that then gets you into 2025. So you're going to be looking at 2025 to 2028.
Right, more or less.
More or less. Okay, in your term. What do you think you can get done?
You know, the main issue we're dealing with right now, specifically, is the budget situation. So basically, to go back a bit, the San Marcos, our general fund, derives a lot of its revenue from sales tax revenue. And right now, we're projecting that that revenue is going to come under projections, and that fiscal year 2025 is going to have a deficit. I don't want to give the exact figures because it's still not completely certain.
Okay, you don't have to say one way or the other, but I've heard about $2 million.
Broadly in that range, yes.
Yeah.
Also projected that fiscal year 2026 is going to have also a shortfall. Not quite as large, hopefully. But that one is also projected to have a shortfall.
Now, this shortfall that you're hearing, because the budget, we talked about this, the budget is not going to actually come out until right before the next, what is it, the 20th of this month is when we get the first shot to see anything about the budget.
Right. The next council meeting is August 20th.
That's it. And that is when
this
budget
is takes effect. Would be at takes effect at the beginning of October.
Right. But you've got two times. So you've got the August 20th meeting, and then you've got meetings coming up in September, and that is when everything gets finalized. And right. So no one really knows, but we do know kind of some rumblings on this. But let me ask you, from the question here is, you're talking about sales tax deficit. Is that because of the economy, because things are changing? And the second part of that question is, yeah, what about the property tax with the buildings coming off the tax rolls from the from Texas State?
Right. So to go back to that question first off, so the university purchased two apartment complexes near Texas State. Because the university is a state government entity, they do not pay taxes. They do not pay property taxes to our tax rolls for the city or for the school district. And so that creates by itself a permanent budget shortfall that we have to address. It's not the only cause of this issue, but it is one of many. But part of it is also sales tax revenue.
And just to put that into reference point, it's about $500,000 a year came off the tax rolls from the university buying these two pieces of property. And there's other pieces of property that they've been buying.
Yes.
And so there is...
This is not the only two, but yeah. When the university buys land, it basically penalizes the city permanently because we have to basically raise taxes everywhere else or cut the budget.
Or build somewhere else.
Yeah,
we have to build out the periphery. And we'll get to that in a minute. But let's go back, because that was the second part of the question.
Sure.
Let's go back to the first part, sales tax.
Sales tax, the issue from my perspective is sales tax, by definition, is a lot more in flux. It's based on the economy. It's based on the economic trends. You know, when we had COVID happen, there was a very serious question of, are we going to break the budget because of COVID-19 basically, you know, shutting down so much of the sales tax economy. Sales tax, you know, the big revenue generations are also the university and students, but also the outlet malls, also some businesses that are located here. There has been one change in the past couple of years in state law. Before, when you were doing online sales and you're collecting sales tax, what mattered was where that business was located, like its headquarters. And we actually incentivized a business to come to San Marcos, put its headquarters here, on the assumption that we would collect sales tax revenue from them based on that law. Well, the state, shortly after, changed state law and said it depends on where the person buying it is from, to basically give that money out to the rest of the state, which was good for the rest of the state. But San Marcos had already given economic incentives to bring that business
based
here.
On that. So,
and
we,
so
now
we basically lost that revenue source. And so that's another aspect of it. Long term, from my perspective,
we're gonna shelve that one for just a little bit. We're gonna talk about that later on, but that's the incentives portion, okay?
Right.
So I want to talk about that one, but go on, because we're talking about the sales tax impact to the city right now that we're looking at, that they're seeing a deficit, and part of that was a change in what they planned on with the incentives, but
there's also been a change in state law regarding property taxes, basically that limits how much your property tax can go up every year. And there's good reasons for that, but as a consequence, that's another, I think it's about $750,000 in revenue that we just did not plan on not having. And so now the good news is, like, when we budget out for the city budget, we build basically for every department. What if we have to cut your budget by 5% this year? Mm-hmm. How do you do that? Which positions do you not fill? What jobs do you not do? What do you push down the road 6 weeks or 6 months? Yeah. So it's not like this is the end of the world. We have plans and contingencies to do that. The problem is this is a long-term problem.
There you go. And you're right. It's the long term. Yes, we can go on ahead and band-aid this, and we're going to be hearing some speeches of that. I mean, as a, not as your radio host, but as your long term citizen that goes down every time there's a budget to make sure that somebody is trying to speak up for this. I'm going to be down there asking some hard questions this year. And, but, you know, personally, yes, that's what I want to know from the candidates is what they see as some solutions for us. So what, I mean, you know, these are some of the headwinds that we've got now. Some things have changed. Okay, so San Marcos now has to reset. We've got a new city manager she's now been in there 1 year. And she's
is doing a good job.
But she's just, you know, this is somebody that you're working with. And we've got two new assistant city managers there into the mix. There's a big change going on within the staff at city. What's your feelings on that? What are you seeing?
I think we've got I have not sat down with the new assistant city managers. I trust Stephanie Reyes, who is our city manager. A lot of people that I know that interact with her said they've been very happy for job performance. I'm happy with what I've seen. And I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt. If these are the people that she trusts to bring in, that's going to be a good call. I also have a good relationship with Sam McGeary, the city attorney. I think we've got sort of the high level, and some department heads. We have good people. Yes, there's been some turnover. That's not the best because you sometimes lose that institutional knowledge, but it's an opportunity to bring in some fresh ideas and some fresh blood. And so I'm cautiously optimistic that we're kind of on the right path here.
Okay, so the green bike thingies we got out front here, but that are lined the road coming down Hopkins, actually on Hunter Road before it turns into Hopkins right there, $300 each.
Mm-hmm.
And then we ended up, putting in new little things out there, and they're all down. And then it ends up where the bicyclists kind of stop.
Right.
And then they can't go anywhere. And we've spent all that money.
A lot of bicyclists, and they say that the way we have things set up right now downtown, they don't feel safe riding the bike down here because of the way it weaves in and out of traffic. And so, you know,
Is this good stuff or is this bad stuff? Is this stuff we need to change? Is this stuff that's within the, in the purview of council? I mean, or is this stuff just, hey, it's going to happen and council's just there to rubber stamp it?
No, I don't. I've never been a rubber stamp for anybody, whether that's on PNC or historic preservation or in council. I don't just defer to somebody else because that's not why I'm there. With that being said, we have a professional, paid, well-paid staff for a reason. You know, we don't have a council of everybody with, you know, 10 years of experience in a business administration or public affairs or the experience that the staff provides. To go back to your specific question, I'm not sure this is going to be that the bicycle lanes downtown are being used and are safe enough. I that's something I want to explore on council.
I guess it's how do we get into
but
this?
How do we get the policy questions is one of, and it's one of those. There's no one specific answer. You know, we had, for example, we had a group that basically lobbied, as they had a right to do, for the PNZ to put certain projects related to bike lanes and things like that to prioritize them for capital improvements.
Right.
And the commission, for a lot of those, eventually agreed on that decision. This was several years ago, and some of those have been built. Some of them are not have not been built yet. So that was very much a kind of a bottom-up process where it was a, hey, this is in the budget, this is in the capital improvement budget, but you've got it set in a 5 years, we want it in 2 years.
Right.
And so that ended up, you know, that got prioritized.
And pushed something else back then.
Right, by necessity, and that's kind of the consequence of all this is you put something up, you don't create money by budgeting.
But this is from people coming and speaking before a commission, yeah. Which, and you know, that's you're basically there. And depending on what people ask you, or they come in to talk about, you know, you're going off of you're there listening to them for their 3 minutes, yeah. And these add up, you know. So the more people that get in there for 3 minutes,
10 people at City Hall can make a lot of difference.
Yeah, and so okay, well, hey, let's see. Let's go ahead and take a quick station break. I am talking to Griffin Spell, who is running for place 5 on the San Marcos City Council. The elections are going to be in November, but the filing deadline is coming up on Monday, and Griffin was one of the early ones to file in, and we've got him here talking to you tonight about planning and zoning, talking about commissions, talking about the hard choices we've got going forward with budget, and we're going to come back and talk with him some more. A few more issues here, and then stick around before everything's done tonight. I am going to be talking about the press conference today and the news out yesterday from Malachi Williams. KZSM 104.1, San Marcos, Texas, 78666. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Talking about music coming up, I do need to make sure that you know about Crazy Zoo happening next weekend. That is, what in the heck is Crazy Zoo? It is where we have got all sorts of acts, all sorts of things going on, all that crazy stuff that is KZSM. Crazy Zoo San Marcos. Okay, there you go. But we're going to be doing this every year, just like we do the SMMA Music Awards in January. We're doing this one in August. And it is indoors at the Mark during the day. And so, you know, hey, man, I'd like to be in the Mark. I'd like to see a show there. Well, come on down. It is free. Now, we do have the VIP experience, though, for $50 for a ticket for 2 days. And that gets you upstairs, get to kind of do a backstage with the artists and talk to them after the show, get some pictures, all sorts of cool stuff. And so that is going to be happening here next weekend, August 24th and the 25th. Free family-friendly festival. Come on out and see that. So let's get back to the interview here. We're talking with Griffin Spell. And, you know, we left off, we've talked about, yes, you see the budget as the biggest issue. And so in 3 years, you want to try to just get it going, get San Marcos on a better financial footing, yeah. Or what?
And that's part of it from my perspective is long term, we need to do better about bringing in not only jobs, but particularly non-commercial, where it's like manufacturing, like Fairmont, CFAN, Epic Piping, something business like that, where they're not so dependent, we're less dependent on the sales tax revenue, but also providing jobs for San Marcans. Remember that despite the university, the majority of our city residents don't have college degrees. They are looking for jobs with skills, whether it's on welding, mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, manufacturing, whether it's
AC, quality. AC, yeah. Whatever it may be.
You know, so those, if we can bring them to San Marcos, not 20 miles away, remember, if they're outside the city limits, they don't pay sales, they don't pay property taxes.
Yeah.
And it's kind of convenient for people. And we're also to commute to those jobs. But also remember, we're competing with other cities. Those people that are looking for jobs here in San Marcos are competing with people in other cities for those jobs. And if, you know, so it's one of those, we have to be better about trying to be careful with exactly who and what and where, but just sort of letting it pass us by, because we're kind of in a real age with, and you know this probably better than I do, with bringing some, say, chip manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those jobs left the country basically 25 years ago.
Yeah, I sent them overseas.
And you know more about this than I do.
And now we're getting them back.
And now after COVID, people have realized that there's a consequence to having all the manufacturing in overseas, in China, in Taiwan, in Korea, in Japan. And so we've seen actually a very much a reindustrialization, particularly in that industry particularly, but just in general, a lot of push to make things again. And that's been a push that the Biden administration has done a lot of work on, and that I would expect whoever wins the election in November is going to want to follow up on that. And so, you know, San Marcos is kind of in a unique spot where we're close to Austin, San Antonio, but we're also along a major freeway that travels to Mexico.
Yeah.
And so we've kind of got a place where we can bring a lot of it.
We talk about bringing it in. But one of the things that caught my attention here that I've talked about on the show over the last couple months is the quiet withdrawal from the city from about 100 jobs, 75, I think was what they had. Still had good paying jobs, 75 to 100. It's been upwards of 150 to 200 at Widelight. Mm-hmm. And Widelight was bought out by Phillips, and then they were bought out by somebody else. But now they have been moved. Part of the jobs went to Pennsylvania, and the majority of those went down to Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't see a single press release from the city. You know, I caught this from a San Antonio blurb that I just happened across. No one's covering it. And here we've got... You know, we talk about Buc-ee's, but we don't talk about the stuff that's going away. And I guess that's my question is, are they actually looking at these things? Who's asking the questions about this?
And part of the issue, the part of the problem really, is the business itself is not even required to tell us. If they downsize, there's no requirement for them to disclose to the city. We find out
the
same press releases that you do.
But, okay, so I walk around downtown. Okay, I talk to people. I say, you know, hey, what's going on? What's the back? You know, what's some of these things? All right, dang it. We lose that many jobs. We lose somebody that's been here. Who from the city is not going over there and knocking on a door and saying, hey, can we sit down for some coffee for a minute and talk about what's going on?
Yeah, well, you're right. We need that.
What, you know, why are we not knowing these things ahead of time that we are looking at, wait a minute, we got somebody that's been here, that's got these jobs, that have these people here.
This has been a recurring issue we've had for several years now. I will give you an example. It's a little bit different, but it's relevant. There was a property downtown that went up for sale and was bought by a private investor. The city did not find out until after the property had been sold. The city probably wanted to bid on that property and would have probably matched the price. For that property, if they had been told that it was for sale and it had been bid, so that was a drop ball. It's the same sort of thing where we're kind of finding out second, third hand, you know, through tax rolls, you know, through process, and we're not really We're behind the ball.
But we're already buying property. We've got, you know, right down here down Guadalupe, we've got a property that's idle right now. The city does have plans. They're trying to do something with it. We've got property that we just bought for a fire department, or a fire station, excuse me, here at the corner of MLK and LBJ in Guadalupe. And that property... We don't have the money for the station right now, but we needed to get that property before that property went up. So the city is already trying to buy as much as they can where they can. You know, okay, so let's talk about that. We've got the one that is coming up, or that has came up over here on by the university. Well, there's two by the university. There's one up here by the coffee shop, and then the other one that's going up is about talking about down here by the park, and talking about parkland and the city buying that property from someone for parkland.
Yeah, and it's always a problem.
So yeah, talk about how you feel about this, and
it's always a problem because remember, same rule applies when the university buys it. When we buy it, it also goes out of tax rolls because we don't pay taxes to ourselves. And so it's always a problem with where does the money come from? Not just to buy the land, but to basically, to make sure we don't break the budget ourselves. But also, you know, sometimes, no one instance you're probably thinking of where the owner has basically said, thank you for the offer. We're not interested in selling it to you. Yeah. And so it's one of those... Cities can use eminent domain, but it's a very, very it's not plan A.
It's nuclear. It's nuclear.
It's a nuclear option. And so it's one of those. We have to be really careful about when we buy land. You know, to give you another example, the city is in talks and discussions about building a new city hall in the future. Part of the reason the proposal is to build it where the current proposal is to build it basically across the street from the current city hall.
Right.
And the main reason why that's being considered is because we already own that land.
Yes.
We're not having to, if we were, and I know people were advocating for building a city hall downtown. The problem is we would have to buy up a substantial amount of land.
Oh, heck, that ain't that far. That ain't that far to go down the street. Okay. All right. Let's be okay. Here's a little factoid for you. Do you know how many, and I'll have to pull this picture up here in just a second. Got any idea how big San Marcos is? How many square miles do we got? I mean, we're not going to put you on the spot too much.
And the problem is it keeps growing because we keep annexing.
Yeah, but the last one that I just spotted, let's see if I can come back to that
and,
one.
And
on
in
my
particular,
here.
The city, you know, the other thing to keep in mind is, and we actually were going up to City Hall 2 weeks ago, we're not a circle. We're basically an oval in a lot of ways.
Yeah, in a lot of ways.
And so we're actually having to, so at the last city council work session, there's a plan and they're going to build a LCRA, a repeater transmitter tower for emergency services out south down towards Guadalupe County.
Yeah.
Because our fire department radios are not reliable that far out, basically.
And let's talk about that in just a second. So San Marcos city limits, this is according to one of the city sites I'd picked up here. This was on as of 6/27/2024. We have 40.29 square miles, 25,783 acres.
Yeah.
Now, there are a few ranches out in West Texas that are bigger than us. You know, but that's covering a lot. And so much of that now is to the other side of 35. And that's where that growth is going on down there, right? And so I was down 123 this last week, and I'd posted a few things on that from we had that just came before city council for the new development proposal, right?
Right. And so a lot of the growth we're seeing is... Basically, it's better to explain where it's not happening. It's not happening up the hill from us downtown towards Wimberley because that area is over the Edwards Aquifer Recharge Zone. And so there are, for good reasons, a lot of restrictions on development in that area because of the basically the everything that goes into the ground gets into the aquifer in the recharge zone.
Yeah, we do have a whole new development up there, and we've got a movie studio that's supposedly coming in and building jobs and all that good stuff.
And with that being said, though, there are a lot of restrictions on those developments in development agreements. And I've seen those at PNZ. With the film studio, they are leaving a lot of that land as part of that agreement. A lot of that is going to be CD1, which basically means undeveloped. Okay. It's going to be grassland, fallow. It's not going to be paved over, and that's part of that agreement. And that's because of the fact that it is a environmentally sensitive area, and there are karst features on the ground. And it's just not, for a lot of reasons, we don't want development there. The consequence of that, however, is that pushes development everywhere else. In particular, one of the things that came up again, the LCRA tower, the development's going out towards county line down towards Guadalupe County and New Braunfels. Right now, it is kind of, you can see where San Marcos ends, and then there's a gap, and then New Braunfels begins. That may not last much longer, just because of it is right on a freeway, is between two population centers.
Sure.
New Braunfels is, I want to say, 98,000 now residents.
Yeah,
close to about 100.
They have surpassed us. They have surpassed us,
and they are still growing. Yeah. San Marcos is growing too. The figures I've seen are minimum 70,000 probably.
Yeah.
Compared to when I moved here, it was about 48-50.
We've slowed down on our growth over the last three years. We're at about a 1.2% each year growth.
We have.
Which is but for most cities, that's still pretty good. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. But we have gone down from where we were at a 3-5% growth. We are now at about a 1.2 to 1.5 to 2, somewhere in there.
Okay? But where that growth has moved to now is Kyle and Buda.
Yes.
And they are growing the way that we were growing 15 years ago.
So here's the next, part of this is resources. Okay, so San Marcos has made a lot of decisions to take into our water rights that we have with the Edwards Aquifer. We lease those out. And then we do that in credit, and we use the LG
Alliance
RBA.
Water.
Yeah.
So the city has an agreement, and Kyle and Buda. So basically, to go back to the question you were trying to raise here, the city, Kyle, Buda, the cities in the area basically have an agreement for Alliance Water, and so we bring in water from the east. And that supplements
from the Guadalupe River from Dunlap,
which is
basically fed by Canyon Lake Dam. Okay, so Canyon Lake is our reservoir that
thinking more to the east of us, not Canyon Lake to the southwest.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But basically, we bring in water from that area.
Yeah.
To supplement, and our projections are that San Marcos, even with our projected growth, growing to eventually over 100,000 people, we will still have water. Our water situation should be fine going forward for the next 25 years plus. The issue is the pipeline that was going to carry from San Marcos to Kyle, that water hasn't been built, is in the process of being built. And so Kyle is basically buying some water from us.
Right.
And they've been doing it for about 2 years now. That is not a long-term plan, because the pipeline that carry water, because they're part of the same agreements we are,
yeah,
that pipeline is going to be built, and they won't be buying from us. They'll get the water from the same source we do.
Okay.
We're basically cut. We're the middleman right now. We're not going to be the middleman for much longer.
Well, and that's what everyone's, that comes up about that. But the resources, we're looking at all this development. I mean,
right. And the issue is for cities, water is like one of the top three things that you really have to do right. Water, trash, police.
Yeah.
Your city is not doing...
And electric, because we
do have a city utility, but it's one of those...
How's the electric set for the next few years?
Everything I've seen has been telling me that short term, medium term is good. It's one of those I need to do a little more research on, just because of I know through the Alliance water situation that our water situation is fine, and we do have agreements for the record with the Lake Dunlap. I'm not saying that we don't have those. I'm saying we were smart, and that we basically have multiple sources of water.
Right.
We have the well water basically from the aquifer
that we can still go back and tap back into, all that we're not using it right now.
And we have the Alliance water situation, and so we were smart and diversified our water sources so that even if one has an issue, we are still going to be fine.
How are we doing on trash?
So there is our agreement is with a company called TDS, Texas Disposal Services, and that one is coming up for review. There have been a few people that have been asking the city to basically open it up for what's called the RFP, request for proposal. Basically, they want an open bid process because there is another company that wants to bid on that contract.
But all of that is going over to Creedmoor for the most part, I think, right now.
As I believe so, yes.
And so that one is maybe another 5-10 years.
My understanding is that these are 5-year contracts.
Well, no, what I'm looking at is how much more they've got space.
Ah.
And that's the thing. And so we now have the new one. Now, have they started work on it down in Caldwell County?
I think so. My understanding with our contract, and I'm not the expert here.
Yeah.
But my understanding with our contract is basically it's their responsibility to make sure it goes somewhere. If they run out of space, it's their problem to solve.
Okay.
In theory, knock on wood. And TDS, to be fair, which is our current company that we do business with, this is not their first rodeo. We are not their only city.
Oh, sure. I mean, it's multiple. I'm more looking for the future here. And, what this comes back to is that those that you elect right now, they've got 3 years, but they are going to be impacting us for the next 10 years. The work that you do, and that's why this comes down, this is what this comes down to, if you have someone that says, Griffin's going to be pro-development, and
don't simplify people down to single issues or single topics, whether that's me or whether it's anyone else in these races. I have a voting record on PNZ. Go back and watch the meetings. The meetings are all online. Even the ones we had during COVID where we were all on Zoom. You don't have to gamble and wonder how I'm going to vote on issues or how I'm going to approach topics. You can go back and check the records for yourself. I am proud that occasionally I've been the only commissioner to vote no on something. I've been the only commissioner to vote yes on things. I don't apologize for that. Sometimes you have to stand up for what you believe in. I don't rubber stamp anyone's proposals. Even if I agree with them, I still ask tough questions.
So windowless apartment units and banning them, what do you think on that?
I don't like windowless apartment units, personally.
Okay. And so when it's come up before you on the PNZ, is that something that
I don't know if we've had any specifically windowless apartment complex units, because I think our development code requires them right now. If not, that's the sort of thing that gets put in the development code.
What do you think is going to happen over here at Lamar School property, and what do we got to do to get that one jump-started before we have somebody burn it down on us?
I don't know what the plan is for that property. My understanding is the investor group that bought it still owns it. It's one of those, and we've had, for the record, proposals to extend downtown to basically move downtown closer to there. I have voted those down.
Okay.
And so I would not. That property is not downtown. It is. We have to be. We need something there that is compatible with the neighborhood, but is also a good use of the property and good use of the area, and also respects its history. It is probably, I'm saying probably because I don't have the documents in front of me, probably the first desegregated high school in Texas.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It goes back. Let's see here. And what would you do differently than past councils have done if you win a council seat?
I want to be a little more proactive on a couple things, particularly when it comes to businesses in terms of jobs and things like that. Sometimes we are very reactive. like we get approached by a business, and I'm thinking of one in particular. I don't want to say which name it is, and they're like, we want to build a location in your city, and if you don't give us incentives, we're going to build it 5 miles up the road.
Yeah.
I get that sometimes that happens. We need to be a little better, in my mind, at trying to bring in a good compatible jobs and businesses to San Marcos and not rolling the dice and hoping they're just going to come by themselves.
So how do you do that as a city council member?
We do have economic incentive organizations or groups. But the other thing also is we have to be better. Take an example. We send council members to D.C. occasionally. Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes
on junkets once a year. Yes,
for good reason.
Because we pay them $500,000 up there to help us get an ear with the
and if you saw the check we got from Greg Kazar like 2 to 3 days ago,
yeah,
those pay for themselves.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's only like one or two people. We have 7 council members. Why is it not 7?
Yeah.
Why are we not putting all putting the entire force to try and get whatever support we can, because in the reality is, I hate that sometimes it's this way, but we have to advocate for San Marcos, because if we don't, nobody else will.
Okay, so the big thing that you see then, to paraphrase that, is that we've got to fight more for San Marcos, for better incentives and for smarter deals, basically, is it?
Right.
And, you know, you want to spearhead
that on
council.
We have to be the
council.
Advocates for our community, because that is our job.
Okay.
On council, as council members, and as part of the community as a whole, with organizations like, where's the Alliance Water Board, whether it's the CAMPO, Capital Area Metropolitan Planning Organization, CAPCOD, the Capital Area Council of Governments. If we don't support San Marcos, we get the short end of the straw. So I know we're running at the end of time here. So.
I'm going to give you another minute. I just want to go back through. And these are from some, basically, I've put out there for everybody, hey, what are your top three issues?
Yeah. And we had a campaign event yesterday, and we had someone that I had never met before and said, hey, I've got an issue in my neighborhood. It was a tax issue. We basically gave him what support we could and said, sympathetic, but it's a, here's who you need to talk to. Here's the person to ask. Here's my perspective. Here's probably how you can solve it. And it's that sort of a...
That's your role is, yeah. I mean, to be straight, that's the primary role of the city council member, is that you need to walk your streets. You need to be out there and talking to people. And you need to be, hi, here I am, and how can I help you? No. It's, hey, that doesn't hurt in San Marcos, but no, I know you. No. Getting out there, that's what it goes back to as real politics in so many ways.
To be a voice for the voiceless, to be an advocate for those who have no one else.
All right. So there you go.
And that's what I've been on PNZ. It's what I've been in Historic Preservation. It's what I like to be on council.
All right. Is that a good way to wrap this up?
Okay. I think so.
Sounds good. And so, Griffin, spell your name out. How can they find you? How can they help if they want to get involved in your campaign? When do you start putting up signs? All those good things.
Signs are already going up.
Okay.
Signs are already going up. More are going to be coming up. We are planning on having a couple more events coming up in September. We will be posting those on Facebook, social media, Twitter. I don't call it X, it's Twitter. But we'll be posting those online.
Dang, you're getting old school.
Sorry. But
getting close to that 40, are you? Huh? Yeah.
Not there yet.
The feathers went up real quick there.
But it's going to be, we're going to run a very vigorous, we're going to block walk every neighborhood. We're going to reach out, we're going to get every vote we can get. And we'll see how the voters feel about it in November.
What are you going to do on all of those apartment complexes?
We'll do what we can.
I mean, that's the thing. This has changed a lot in the 20 years from when you used to be walking the neighborhoods. That's not where the numbers are now. The numbers are out at the all the apartment complexes that have gone in.
Well, and we've had new neighborhoods that have been developed.
Sure. You know, so we've got the Trace now. You've got, right. We've got, Rancho 12 going up out of town. Where are the movie studios
being built? La Cima.
La Cima, thank you. There's a lot that's gone in, but really, for the money, you know, for the number of people that have came in, it's all of these to the east of I-35, around Amazon, around Tesla, you know, all of these places. We have got so many apartments that are coming in. We're still at 70% apartments.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I didn't hit that too much, but affordable housing.
I'm a renter. The majority of our city is renters. The majority of our council is not. The majority of our planning and zoning commission is not. So I am already kind of an advocate for the majority of our city. San Marcos, and a lot of it's just economics, but a lot of it is the university. And a lot of it is the fact that even after people graduate, sometimes they're not quite, do I want to stay here and buy a home and live here for the foreseeable future? Or am I open to moving to another city, in 2 to 3 years or 6 months even? And so there's a lot of reasons why we have a lot. But also, this is not a San Marcos only trend. Most of the developments in other cities in Texas have been more away from single-family housing towards apartments. But remember, there are already another 2,000 single-family homes that have been zoned for that have not been built yet in San Marcos.
Oh, yeah.
So the development, and I see this on PNC all the time, there are in the pipeline more neighborhoods already planned to be built.
Oh, yeah. But that's the big dynamic that's changed in here. All right. Well, thank you very much for coming in tonight, Griffin. We're going to take a quick break, and I'm going to come back and talk about Malachi Williams. Be right back with you here. You are listening to We the People here on KCSM 104.1 FM. San Marcos, Texas, and the views expressed on the show are those of the hosts, the guests, and not necessarily those of KCSM or SMTX CRA. We're going to be right back with you.
Centro Cultural Hispano de San Marcos and LULAC Council 654 have collaborated their efforts to hold the third annual Hispanic Heritage Exhibition Walk in San Marcos, Texas. The Exhibition Walk will serve as a kickoff event for Hispanic Heritage Month. This event will take place on Saturday, September the 14th, 10 a.m. at Centro Cultural Hispano de San Marcos, which is located at 211 Lee Street, and will culminate at the historic Hays County Courthouse. The walk will display the flags of Latin American countries represented during Hispanic Heritage Month. At the courthouse, there will be music, food, and vendors. Proceeds from this event will grant local students with scholarships to further their education. If your organization or business would like to participate, or for more information, please email us at HispanicHeritageExhibitionWalk@gmail.com. The Rotary Club of San Marcos is sponsoring a Rise Against Hunger food packaging event during World Food Week in October. We need 150 volunteers to pack 15,000 meal packets in 2 hours. Each package serves 6 people, so that's meals for 90,000 people, which will be sent to a famine-plagued area of the world. Locally, we will also be raising money in October for the San Marcos School Fuel Program and the Hays County Food Bank. Join us for this food packaging event during World Food Week on October the 19th, from 9 a.m. to noon at the First Lutheran Church in San Marcos. We hope you'll help us take a bite out of hunger, both locally and internationally. For more information and to sign up to volunteer, please visit our webpage at events.riseupagainsthunger.org/Rotary Club San Marcos 2024.
Some of the great things that are going on around town that you need to be aware of, and also start thinking about ringing a bell for Salvation Army. They came in and were talking to us here, Mr. Bryant from the neighborhood. I'd got to mention, I just saw two of our lovely dames of downtown that had the, for many years over here, had the business off the square that, you know, anyone could go and see the cats and see all that good stuff that was going on over here. Just they're now retired. And, you know, I get to see, oh, they're involved over here at the Price Center too. So, you know, we still have some feelings here. Let's go move on. Want to touch base real quick. We'll be talking some more about this in the coming weeks. The Office of the Hays County Criminal District Attorney, this is on Thursday afternoon, late on August 14th. Kelly Higgins announced today that the Hays County Grand Jury concluded its review of the April 11th, 2024 shooting in which a San Marcos police officer fatally shot 22-year-old Malachi Williams. The shooting occurred on April 11th, 2024 in the parking lot of the HEB grocery store at 641 East Hopkins in San Marcos. The grand jury considered the evidence and determined that the officer's actions were justified under Texas law. No indictment was issued in the matter. And there was this morning at 10 o'clock at the San Marcos Police Department, a televised, well, they had on their Facebook feed, they had press and they only allowed people with press credentials in. They did not want the family in there, and they didn't want a scene, and they controlled it. And this has all been controlled with the answers and with how this is coming about. And I'm not saying that there's a different narrative. There's always narratives, folks. But this young man brandished two knives, threatened two people that were walking back into the Riverside neighborhood from the convenience store, and they called 911. The officers went, found him back at the convenience store. Most likely, he was known. Yeah, he was, you know, local, and you know, he came out, and the officer told him to stop, and he refused and ran. And while he was running, they tried to tase him twice. They couldn't tase him. He continued to run over towards the big HEB. He was in the gas station parking lot, and one of the officers put his taser away and pulled out his service revolver and shot him in the back as he was running. He had dropped the knives. The officer wasn't aware that he dropped the knives because of where it was being blocked by the car. And we'll see what the ramifications are of this. The police chief talked about difficulties in contacting the family. I know this was something that we've covered before, since the family was wanting to see the videos and to get those out. Those are out now, and it'll be interesting to see whether we have any other legal actions from this. But from a criminal side of things, this has been put to rest, and the city was on top of that quickly afterwards. We'll talk some more as we go on this one. It is a tragedy on all sides. Malachi was a very bright student here as a Rattler, and was known in the community. And it's a sad turn of events. How do we change these things? How do we affect that, or is this just the random stuff that's going to happen that we can't control? Those are some of the questions we'll be talking about. We'll be asking the candidates, and I want to do thank Griffin Spell for coming in tonight and speaking with you, we the people. We're going to be back with you next Friday night from 7 to 8 o'clock. Thank you very much for tuning in to KZSM.